we've still got a lot to learn within our own solar system, and we really there's a lot of clues inside there as well that perhaps, and we ought to use that as a springboard for looking elsewhere. And what I've got here is a view of the overview of the solar system, and as you've seen before, and we're all aware of the fact that the sun has got so many planets around it, and that they do stretch out to a great distance. The sun, of course, is at the centre of the whole show, and I believe there was an interesting talk, talk by Colin Norman last month, which unfortunately I missed. He pointed out that apparently our sun is quite rare in the sense that it's at the low mass end of the spectrum. There are many suns heavier than ours and more massive, and apparently once you go about below, I think Andrew was saying tonight, 0.08 of a solar mass, there seem to be very few stars that are less than about 8% of the mass of the sun. And if one does go, I mean, it's possible they are out there, but they haven't sort of switched themselves on. I mean, after all, we'll soon discover that Jupiter is actually a potential sort of stellar object, but it hasn't sort of evolved far enough for any sort of nuclear reactions to initiate at its centre. And so you need to have a certain temperature, usually about 500,000 degrees, before deuterium starts to react with protons to produce heavier elements. And anyway, the sun makes up, as we know, or the great bulk of the mass of the solar system. The planets are just a small residue. And so if one goes, looks then at the planetary system in conjunction with the sun, and again, this is, someone was mumbling over there about these frightful collages of planets. This is probably the worst possible collection, because they're not really shown to scale. And also the slide has been incorrectly mounted. That is not a new sort of comet you see on the left there, but it's actually a defect in the slide. And for some unknown reason, now there's Mercury hiding behind Venus there, and then of course the Earth. But those inner planets have been grossly drawn out of scale. And as I said, the terrestrial planets are only about a 300,000th the weight of the Sun, and even Jupiter is only about barely a thousandth the mass of the Sun, just a little over that. So they are very much smaller compared to the Sun, and we're all sort of isolated in space too. It's actually at least about a light year before you get to another star. So I believe that the solar system uniquely did form from the Sun when the Sun was quite young, and the Sun managed to do it all on its own. And although there have been sort of, I heard a broadcast on the science show a week ago of some chap called Zuckerman from UCLA. He claimed, in fact, that the solar systems might be quite rare. I don't even think that is in fact the case. The argument being, as we'll soon discover a bit furthermore down in this talk, is that the Hubble telescope has homed in on lots of nearby stellar systems, and they haven't apparently been able to find any evidence of sort of gas around these other stars at Jupiter's distance from enough gas to form a Jupiter. And so the argument is, because these other stars, young stars, don't seem to have any Jupiter size or the amount of gas there to form a Jupiter, that there can't be a planetary system there. But we've just learnt just a moment ago that once you go below about 0.08 of a stellar mass, you don't actually, any sort of object less than that can't shine in its own right. It relies entirely on reflected light. And so if you're looking at a young protostellar object which is surrounded by a cocoon of dust and extending well inside the orbit of Mercury, and there was a lot of material dumped off by the Sun in its final stage of contraction from the inner regions of Mercury inwards, the reason you can't see these outer objects is because, you know, the Sun's radiation for that star is just unable to reach those planets. It's only today, when the solar system is swept clean, of course, that you'd expect to see these planetary objects. And of course, the Hubble cannot actually detect a planetary object it's just far too faint against the glare of the sun. And the existence of these other gases is deduced from other sort of microwave experiments and things. But what I suspect has happened is that the when the people get around to looking at these disks of gas and dust that are left behind for these other stars, these disks are already about at least 10 million years old. That was the sort of time scale Zuckerman was using. And therefore, by that stage, the horse was already bolted, because these, I believe, planetary systems are formed very early on in the piece, within the first, probably the first 300,000 years, and there's still a lot of dust and stuff around there. But if you actually take a photograph of a star producing a planetary system, you have to capture that photograph during this first 300,000 years. And the way statistics of stellar objects are running at the moment, when you look out in the nearby universe, you tend to see stars that have been hanging around there a longer time. It's the old story of being on a country road and coming to a traffic light across a major highway. You've got to have to wait for 3 or 4 minutes to get a green signal. And a lot of people regard this as some sort of personal persecution on them. I sometimes regard it as such when I drive around the streets of Richmond. I find the Lord Mayor has got a sign, his own personal light sequence set up for his own street, but I take about 12 minutes to get out of my own. And so what's happening here, the reason why these guys can't see these Jupiter-sized objects is they're looking at the wrong sort of time zone. They're looking at a time of about 10 million years when the inner star is still shrouded with lots of dust, and you can't see Jupiter-sized objects there, and the dust that they expect to see there to form Jupiter, the gas and dust, which the models of George Weatherall suggest it takes at least 10 million years to produce a planet, these planets have already formed, because planets, I believe, form on a much sort of shorter time scale. Now, before I get into any sort of further conundrums, let me proceed here and show you a NASA view of the solar system taken by the Voyager spacecraft, looking back after it had finished its journey through the solar system. And you can see that the immense scale in the solar system here, and they've got individual pictures of the planets there, and they're barely sort of specks of light. You can't possibly make out the individual planets on that scale. You really have to amplify them. And so that, the solar system really is incredibly sparse, and there must have been some fantastic focusing mechanism for each planet to form. You know, you've got a planet of about Neptune's mass out here, about 15 or 17 Earth masses, and then Uranus. Each planet is separated by huge distances. And how did they, you get these little well-defined blobs, and the distances of them form a well-defined sequence as well. And I don't see any way in the world, and I've got actually a computer demonstration of this, where you can actually form these planets just out of a great sort of disk. The current American theory is that the planetary system formed from some extended disk. But that's unable to account for the focusing of why you get planets at each. So even within our own backyard, we didn't have to go out to typical interstellar distances to see this comet. It actually arrived and put on this fireworks display within our own solar system. So I think we ought to be content with what we do get in that arena, and not sort of push things too hard. I think that's what those Hubble boys are doing. They're pointing their instruments here and there and everywhere, and taking lots of shots and then publishing lots of papers about this and that and the missing mass and the Hubble constant. So here's a comet coming past our own, not my own backyard, I'm using it in a sort of general sense. But they are really wonders that we can learn a lot from, studying the emissions from the the cosmic, from the tail of these comets. And so it is true. We have a lot of that stuff there ready for us. Now, where do where does this solar system form? Where do these comets come from? And things like that. Well, that's not an unreasonable question, and I think it's quite reasonable that we can look at, now that we understand about comets quite a lot, we understand an awful lot about meteorites, the compositions of meteorites. It's quite reasonable, with specimens right here in the lab, to analyse them and to make reasonable inferences on what they may, the temperatures at which they formed, the sort of conditions within they formed in our nearby visible universe, the one where, you know, like Voyager went to Jupiter, it's very reasonable, Saturn, and getting those images that are sent back to Earth from those distances. They're the sort of technology that we need, and that's the thing we can sort of have reasonable confidence in. Well, I think that the idea is the Sun, as I said, formed within its own region. There was the perhaps a pre-solar cloud at one stage. The Sun was once an interstellar cloud. It would have cooled down. A lot of the gas can't condense, like the hydrogen and helium, but there's a lot of comets could condense. And I think comets actually form from myriads of little grains that settled out in the pre-stellar cloud. So this is long before the Sun formed its sort of Laplacian nebula. There was this very cold, tenuous pre-solar cloud, and comets accreted within that and then started to rain out onto the Sun. And in fact, a lot of these comets got together right at the centre of the pre-solar cloud to form a great nucleus, maybe up to 1 or 2% of the solar mass. And this nucleus, once it becomes sufficiently compressed, then attracted the rest of the gas down. And I think that's how star formation is triggered, through accretion onto cometary cores. I put forward that idea quite a few years ago in connection with what's called the solar neutrino puzzle. It's believed the Sun, you know, has a shortage of neutrinos. Anyways, comets like Halley, I believe, were formed out in the interstellar medium. They're very loose, fluffy sort of things. We saw that with the breakup of Shoemaker-Levy. They don't have much mechanical strength, and the gravity out there in the pre-stellar clouds is very weak. The stuff just comes together, and more or less you just get very simple sticking of grains together, more or less cohesive strengths holding them together, and surface tension and the like, electrostatic effects rather than much gravity. The gravity is a bit weak. But at the centre of the Sun, there would be a great swarm of comets which got there in the beginning. Of course, they've long since melted, and these comets are, you know, would have sublimed, and then, but they would have enriched the centre of the star with lots of carbon and nitrogen. And the early Sun would have burned quite fiercely in the beginning, and possibly burnt out its central store of hydrogen and helium. And that's why I think there are very few neutrinos inside the Sun. They're coming out because it's all burnt out. And then the rest of the Sun, a big cloud that was once there, that would have proceeded to have tumbled in on top of this cometary core, and a huge cloud extending way out, and initially out beyond the orbit of Neptune, a great slowly spinning cloud. Anyway, according to the Laplace's nebula hypothesis, the solar system would have formed from this Sun, would have been a great large cohesive cloud, slowly settling out of the interstellar medium, showing how far apart the planets are. The distances are enormous. I mean, it's bad enough for us to come out tonight on a wet night out into the provinces of, is it Moorabbin? No, we're not at Moorabbin, are we? Yes, Moorabbin. Actually, I was thinking of Mordialloc, but that's somewhere else. And imagine, you know, the huge distances you'd have to travel to a meeting on Neptune or something like that. It's just phenomenal how the spinning and then casting off a family of gas rings. And then the planets, each planet formed in situ from each gas ring. And there's a marvellous focusing effect that takes place as a result of these gas rings. And remember that early slide I showed of concentrated that mechanism was. It's shown in this slide as well. And so I believe the gas rings are the way to go. And the way you form gas rings is actually through supersonic turbulence. And on that fine note, I'm going to stop.